that makes the difference between me effortlessly being able to cross the road and feeling like an equal, like anyone else just going about my day, and not being able to know where I am. Just the fact that I don't know what I'm doing, I feel like I doubt myself now, my self-esteem is on the floor, and these are things that can stay with us for years.
Welcome to Where It's At, the podcast from CIET shining a spotlight on the future-focused design discipline of architectural technology. Know someone who could benefit from listening? Subscribe and share this episode with your network.
I'm Tom Gray, a chartered architectural technologist and your host for today's episode. We're going to talk about something that often gets overlooked in design conversations. How the spaces we create can either include or exclude, empower or overwhelm. I'm very lucky today to be joined by Fern Lullen, a psychotherapist, speaker and BBC broadcaster who has worked across many platforms. She also happens to be blind, and she's going to bring to this conversation a wealth of her experience within the world. We're going to look at the insights that she has and the topics of inclusive design and how the messages we absorb as people and as professionals shape the way that we see the world and each other. The conversation is going to be much about the accessibility and also identity and belonging and what it really means to design spaces and work for everyone. So let's get started and welcome Fern. Thank you for joining us at Where It's At.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, Tom.
No, it's great to have you and thank you for taking the time to be with us today. Let's start at the beginning. What kind of message did you hear growing up about who you could be, and how do you think those shaped you as a person and what you have become, Fern?
Oh, well, I think we all have messages, don't we, around who we feel like we can be when we grow up. And they're usually given to us by authority figures, either caregivers, parents, teachers, all of the adults basically that are around us when we're young. And I think for me as a blind little girl, I was always taught you are no different to anyone else. And that was a message that was very heavily instilled in me and I think has kind of echoed around my mind for many years. And I think that's what happens to all of us. These messages really stay with us and we hear them years on. And I think there was two parts of that. One part of that is that it's made me very resilient and determined. And, you know, it's given me that attitude of, you shouldn't settle for less. You shouldn't be second best. You shouldn't feel like you're any less worthy than anyone else. But at the same time, of course, I do have obvious differences between me and other people in that I can't see. And I understand why people say don't feel like you're any different, because in terms of how much I can bring to the world or how valuable I am, I don't think there's any difference. But there is difference in how I need to navigate the world and how I need to do things that work for me. And I think as time goes by, we're getting better and better at saying not everyone will do things the same way. There's not one size that fits all. You know, we have different learning styles, we have different love languages, we have neurodivergence, you know, different ways of looking at the world. And I think that should be fine. And so in that sense, I think what really needs to happen is that there needs to be more options in the world, because then even if you have a different way of needing to do something, it doesn't mean that you can't do that thing. And I think for me growing up as a disabled person, a lot of the time it's kind of been like, well, if you can't do it the way that everyone can do it, then you can't do it full stop. And I think that's the thing that needs to change, is if we have more options and different ways of doing things, it means that more people can be successful and can kind of challenge those messages that they were given growing up about who can be capable, who can be successful, who can reach their full potential in life.
So would you say that when you were younger that you were less aware of it, and it's only as you become older that you've become more aware of the significant differences versus other people?
I think it definitely does come with hindsight. I think when you look back, you probably do notice and realise things that at the time went a bit over your head. And I think when we can acknowledge that and can kind of almost tell ourselves the things that we needed to hear at that age, which for me very much is this idea of just because you can't do it the way that everyone else can do it doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. Because I think there was a lot of shame for me around, well, there's something that I can't do that somebody else can do. That means I must be not as good as them, or I must be just not as cool, or I don't understand the world that they do. And it wasn't that at all. It was just a lack of accessibility. And when I've kind of realised that and found different ways to make things accessible now, I've realised that what I needed was for someone to come in and say, actually, you do things a bit differently. That's okay. That doesn't make you any less than, but it just means that we need to find ways together to try and make this in a way that will work for you.
Sure. Yeah, no, of course. That makes sense. You've spoken before about loneliness as a gap between who we thought we'd be and who we actually are. This sort of really struck a chord with me. Can you sort of tell me a little bit about the idea and how you've experienced this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, there is this image in all of our minds about who we'd most like to be. So that might be to do with how successful we are, or how socially adept we are, or how easily we move through the world. For me, as I've lost more and more of my vision, I have found myself reaching and longing for the version of myself who can see, and wondering who she would be, because I was born visually impaired, and as I've grown older, my sight has just deteriorated more and more. And so I've never known a 20/20 vision Fern, and I always wonder, how would she be in the world? You know, she'd be able to recognise people from across the road, she'd be able to drive a car, she'd be able to do these things that, as somebody who can't see, I really struggle to do, or, you know, sometimes are just impossible for me to do. And I find myself really wishing I could know her and could experience the world the way that she would experience it. And sometimes that can be really sad. And I definitely have learned to allow myself that grief, that kind of, I'm never going to be that person. But other times, what I've realised is that actually a lot of the things that I think about when I think about sighted Fern are emotions. They are kind of things like she'd be confident, or she would be adventurous, or she would be able to see people and she'd be able to talk to them and kind of like be part of something and feel invited in something. And what it occurs to me is that all of those things actually are not things that I couldn't have just as I am, but it does require the world to be made for me, you know, made with me in mind, because I can reach all of those things being a blind person, but it just requires a little bit more thought and a little bit more change in the way that we do things to make that possible.
But then I guess equally at the same time, if we sort of loop back to the idea of that being the person that you'd like to experience what they would be had they not had the disability that you have, you might be disappointed because that person might not have actually achieved all the amazing things that you do now, and that actually your disability or visual impairment has made you who you are. You wouldn't be the Fern that we all know.
That's very true and very sweet of you, Tom. Thank goodness,
yeah,
maybe.
Well,
some people are thinking that I wouldn't be. But what I would say is that, yes, I think the thing about the ideal version of yourself versus the real version of yourself is that you only see parts of that person, don't you? We all say, oh, wouldn't it be amazing if I looked like that, or if I could do this, or, you know, whatever it might be, I had this much money. And we don't think of that person as a well-rounded human, because, of course, you're completely right. There would be aspects of that person that actually we don't like. Maybe being rich would make us into a type of person that actually is not such a nice person, you know, whatever that might be. But I think what the important thing here, and what I kind of want to emphasise, is that the aspects, the best parts of what I see when I think about the person who could see, are things that I could have if only they were accessible to me. And so there are ways of actually achieving that. It's a beautiful kind of freedom thing where I could think, I'm never going to know her, I'm never going to be her, and just sink into depression because of that. Or I can think, maybe I can be her. Maybe I can be those amazing parts of her that I long for in this body, just the way I am.
So, yeah, and I think that's a really important point, actually, is that there's nothing stopping you. Well, there is within the built environment, potentially, but in theory, there isn't things that are stopping you fulfilling as close a reality in your mind as to what Fern would be with the 2020 vision at the end of the day. And so I guess from a listener's point of view, and what while our listeners to this podcast might not be aware of, is effectively the challenges that you come across during navigating the built environment and the sort of the things that I don't consider when I'm walking down the road. I might be quite happily designing within my practice these certain things for a building, but I don't really appreciate how these affect you and other people, and what can be quite simply a strike of a pen or a pencil is potentially life-changing or completely transforms the way you can actually access something. And what are your sort of thoughts on that, and what are your experiences of that scenario?
I would say navigating the world as someone who can't see is like this ongoing trust, this ongoing feeling of I have to trust that things are where I expect them to be. Because, of course, as you can imagine, if you can't see, you kind of just have to take a leap of faith in some regards. And you kind of get to know certain routes, certain places that you're familiar with. And those things need to be as predictable as possible for me so that I can feel like, oh, I know what I'm doing. I know where I am here. I'm not going to be all of a sudden accosted with some random step or a glass door that I can't see. And so that is so important to feel that I have been seen and I have been considered in this space where people have expected me to be here and imagined me being here and thought if I was in that position with having very little sight, what would I need and how would I feel? And I think that makes the most difference because you talk about challenges. And of course, there are the practical challenges, you know, let's think real world stuff here. So if I'm walking along a pavement and there's bins everywhere, of course, it's bin day. And all of us know it's an obstacle course, right, on bin day. And for me, that is so anxiety provoking. I mean, it injures me physically, but it also bruises my ego every time I go clanking into a bin, very loud, you know, makes a big scene. Everyone's kind of like, oh dear, do you need some help? You know, as nice as they can be about it, I'm horrified, as all of us are. You know, you don't have to not have sight to know what that's like, to publicly humiliate yourself. And so I think the biggest challenge for me is that emotional barrier of not just what is the physical thing here that's causing me pain or causing me frustration, but also how does it make me feel about myself? And I think sometimes we can be so intent on creating buildings that are impressive, that are kind of functional and practical, or that look beautiful, and we forget that actually the most important thing is to create buildings that just make people feel like they're enough, just the way they are, and they're welcome here.
Yeah, and they don't have to be challenged to be something they're not to access it.
Yeah,
effectively. I mean, it brings on a great example, I think. So you and I were in London last week, which was a fantastic experience for a talk on equality and diversity and sort of sight loss and how we can work for people. And it was only when we're walking back to the station that we came across a pedestrian crossing which had the tactile paving on the side of the road. So we were very much aware that we were coming to a crossing. But there they had a big inspection chamber, a manhole cover that was in front of the tactile paving that actually had no tactile paving on. So it's just even simple things that they were remiss in actually kind of designing in a solution for if you happened to be standing in that part, you wouldn't have known there was a crossing there.
Exactly. And what a good example of how where such a small thing can actually have a huge impact on you, because that makes the difference between me effortlessly being able to cross the road and feeling like an equal, like anyone else, just going about my day, and not being able to know where I am, orientate myself, know that there's a busy road coming up, and actually either getting into an awful accident or, you know, potentially something really, really awful, or just as, you know, emotionally horrible, just the fact that I don't know what I'm doing. I feel like I doubt myself now. My self-esteem is on the floor. And these are things that can stay with us for years. They can hang around just like those messages that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's something that's really reflected, I think, throughout all your conversations and all your sort of audiences that you speak to across the country and actually across the world with some of the radio shows you're involved with. You talk with such passion and confidence around the subject. But from a sort of a reality point of view, we talk about tactile paving, but you've often discussed the issues of like just a poorly designed public toilet and how it can be so uncomfortable for you in terms of both emotionally and sort of physically using the space. And so what that says about the sort of process of design, I mean, how do you deal with those situations where every facility could be different?
It's very difficult. And what I will say is that I'm sure everyone listening will agree that a poorly designed toilet is uncomfortable for anyone who has the misfortune of having to use it, because, you know, it's it's not a good experience, is it? Especially if the toilet itself is poorly designed. But what I would say is that unpredictability, it is kind of what I was saying earlier about the thing about public toilets is everything is so different every single time you go into one. So the flush will be in a different place. The loo paper will be in a different place. The sink will, I don't know, how do you use a sink? I recently was shouting through a toilet door to you about not knowing how to put the tap on because there's a million different ways of doing it. Sometimes they have sensors, sometimes there's a knob. Who knows? You know, like we just don't, there's just a million
Absolutely.
Different ways. So
And even in that scenario, the sink was white and the rest of the room was white. So you can actually find the sink, let alone the tap itself.
Yes, exactly. And that, again, is really hard when the room just kind of blurs into each other. It's very difficult to know where you are. And it's interesting that you talk about, you know, me sort of talking to people, doing speeches and doing radio shows and things like that. And these are things that often I think people get so nervous about and so anxious about and think like, how can you talk in front of all these people? I couldn't do that in a million years. And I think that about just popping to the loo. You know, I just think I
Absolutely.
Can't go into a public bathroom and not feel flushed with this anxiety of how am I going to manage this? And is this going to be a situation where I'm going to be happily, you know, let's say I'm going shopping with my friends, feeling good about myself, pop to the loo, come out and just feel like I am incapable, I'm disabled. It really does make a difference. And this is where design can either really empower you to feel like I am capable and I can do this and, you know, have a completely different mindset, or it can just deepen this disconnection between you and the rest of the world. And sometimes even you and yourself, you know, that self that I want to be, that confident, capable self, because it's just in the difference, like you said, of somebody just not considering what would it be like in this space if I couldn't see. And that is the difference that it makes. And I just want to, you know, say to any architects, any designers who are listening, your work matters so much and it does make such a big difference. So please, please consider these things.
Know someone with a story to tell or a topic to explore? Email atpodcast@ciat.global to nominate a guest or a topic.
Absolutely. And our sort of friendship goes back a few years now, but it was only when we first met that I really sort of understood the real practicalities of why things are designed and there's regulations in place to make life livable for you and others with all sorts of sort of specialist requirements that might be needed. And it's just very simple things that we need to consider. And so I guess from that point of view, you sort of have touched on, I suppose, the curiosity and the courage that you have to experience when potentially going into these spaces, whether it be a loo or into a new space somewhere you haven't been before, and that you're there's obviously a connection and a key to changing how we design these things. And you can sort of break down what this might look like in terms of like the real life and how this could work. But what sort of things do you think are some of the, I guess, we should be considering to do or to be mindful of?
Yeah, I think there are a few parts to this. For me, creativity comes in kind of a... There's almost sort of like three C's to creativity, I suppose. One of them, like you said, is curiosity. And curiosity for me is about how can we do this differently? Because I think maybe it's just human nature that we decide on a way of doing something and we don't want to change it, right? If anyone comes in and says, oh, maybe we're going to change the system at work in the office, you know, you're just like, no, I don't, I know what I'm doing, please don't. And actually, curiosity is saying, but is there a better way? Is there a way that actually will benefit everyone? And this is something that I want to emphasize, is that yes, it's good for me as a disabled person, but actually making inclusive design is good for everyone, because there is just so much more access that the world can have to talent, to skills, to opportunities, to money. You know, disabled people have a lot of money to spend. And yes, maybe it might mean taking a little bit more time or spending a little bit more money to design the environment that will work for everyone, but it is going to pay off in spades. And it really, really makes a lot of difference just to be able to say, well, we've never done it like this before, but maybe we can give it a go. And that leads me on to courage, because like you said, courage is a big part of this. And to be able to make that leap of faith and say, okay, I'm going to give it a go, even though I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe courage is just admitting I don't know what I'm doing. And actually, I need a bit of guidance on this. And I think, you know, we talked earlier about some of what happened to me growing up. And I think even as an adult now, but especially growing up, you're kind of mollycoddled a little bit sometimes when you have a disability, or at least I was in my experience, where people want to do things for you and they want to just like swoop into the rescue and be like, oh, don't worry, I've sorted it out. Sometimes when I'm out with my guide dog, Nancy, and people offer to pick up her poo, I'm very tempted to let them just take them up on that offer and just go, yeah, no, go for it. That's fine. But
Please,
that's not helping, especially you, Tom. That's not helping either of us, is it? Because I'm then still stuck in the place where I can't do it. You're then having to do it all for me and resenting me because now you have to do it. It's not good for either of us. And actually, the best way forward is to say, I'm just going to sit with you in this discomfort of your struggle and let's figure out together how we can get through this. Like, is there a way that we can do this and make it easier for you to sort it out? Because then we're both learning together and I don't have to explain to you so much what it is that we've come up with, because we've co-created it. You know, we've collaboratively come up with it. And that leads me on really nicely to connection, because I think there is such a lack of connected thinking around this, where we need to work together more. I saw a statistic that was from the 2021 government census, and it said that 6% of people who are architects are disabled. So that means that, you know, over 90% are not. And that doesn't correlate, because, you know, there's 25% of people in the UK have a disability. And so why is there such a lack of disability in architecture? I think that as somebody who is renovating a house at the moment and I'm having to sort of learn how things work and trying to figure out plans and all that kind of stuff, it's all visual stuff, stuff that I can't access. And when I'm in that situation and everyone else is talking about, oh, well, we could put this here and we can put you know, do that there and this colour and that, and I am just standing there like, this is my house and I can't have a say in any of it. I feel completely alone. I feel so alone. And I think we've all been in rooms where we've heard other people having conversations and it's almost like you're looking through a window and going, oh, that's what connection looks like and I'm not part of it. And that sends another huge message to you, where actually what we should be striving for is how can we do this as a team? How can you use, you know, the knowledge that I have from my lived experience, but also maybe some of the skills that I have? Because we shouldn't just be assuming that just because somebody has a disability, they're not capable of certain things. You know, let's talk about that and let's find ways to create built environments that work for everyone by including everyone, not just as an end user, but as part of that process.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you've sort of really sort of explained that. And I guess there's lots. You were in a position where you were born with sort of sight loss, mm-hmm. but there's lots of scenarios where people won't have sight loss and will be using a building or a space, and then through maybe an accident or ill health or whatever reason, they then lose their eyesight. And then, well, do they then, should they be excluded from the building they've always used or that particular space? Mm. It's thinking long term, isn't it? And not just short term of people who have it currently, an issue with sight loss. So no, that's really interesting. And I guess also from that point of view, if you could change one thing about how designers think or work, what would it be? I mean, would it be effectively how we build the world and how do we make people feel belonged in it? Is it more sort of a basic thing, like an improved toilet arrangement, a standard toilet that is the same wherever you go in the world or wherever it is in this country?
Well, you know that I love a good toilet, Tom. That's very, very absolutely important. I think that's the most important thing maybe to come out of this conversation. You never know. But what I would say is that you just talked, I just want to quickly just touch on what you said about if you gain a disability, it is something that happens a lot to people. In fact, most people who have a disability were not born with it. They acquired it. And what you find is that you are still you. You are not all of a sudden this alien person. You are the person who likes what you like on TV. You're the person who still likes the same hobbies, who still has the same friends, who still lives in the same house. You are still you, but now you just have to navigate the world differently. And so in terms of your question of what would I say to designers, it's this. It's in our busy world where we all have a million different things going on and our to-do list is just out the back door. It's just forever long. I think we all need to take a moment and just say to ourselves, how do I feel in this space? And not just consider how I feel in this space, but also consider how would somebody else feel? And, you know, sort of think about different scenarios. Because like I said earlier, it's not so much the practical experience, although of course that comes into it and plays a big part, but it is, do I feel like I belong here? Do I feel welcome? Is it like someone's coming to the door and saying, hey, we've been waiting for you, come on in? Or is it like I'm in this space where actually, I don't actually think they want me here. This is kind of awkward. Maybe I should leave. Maybe I should just stand in the corner. Or maybe I'm being made to feel like, well, you should just be grateful that you're here. I've not actually gone above and beyond to make it comfortable for you. You should just be pleased that you're on the guest list at all. Those are messages we don't want to be giving to people. And so I think just taking that moment to take a breath and just think, how do I feel in this space? How does it make me feel? If I couldn't see, for example, or any kind of scenario you want to come up with, would I feel safe here? Would I feel like I can be me here? And kind of connect to the values of why you became an architect or a designer in the first place. Why am I doing this? What is important to me? And how can I bring that into the work that I do on an everyday basis? And I think when we can do that, when we can kind of just take that beat to stop and to say, what is actually important here? That's when we open this key to belonging, to making people feel like this feels right. This feels like I can actually be the person that I want to be, the person that I've longed for so long, because we're considering what is that emotional impact of what I'm building here? And is what I'm building here going to make somebody feel like they can access this space just like anyone else can, and that we can connect to each other and work together to make things as good as they can possibly be?
Yeah, I mean, I think as designers, as architectural technologists, architects, interior designers and so on, there's such a big emphasis on this whole theory of wayfinding. So the idea that if you go into an airport that you will be able to find your way by reading signs to get from the car park straight through to your actual aeroplane. But the reality is that's all well and good wayfinding to make it amazing for everyone, but it's not for everyone, is it? Because someone like you, wayfinding is lost in the conventional way, isn't it?
I mean, I've been lost in many airports before and it hasn't been a fun experience. Yes. So I'm surprised that I made it home, but by hook or by crook, I found my way. But yes, it would be very much appreciated if that was just an experience that I could do with less anxiety, that I could just find my way. I mean, how proud would I feel? It might sound stupid, but I would actually feel really proud of myself if I navigated an airport all by myself and felt independent in that. That would mean the world to me. It would make a huge, huge difference.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember before you used the scenario of actually the moment you arrive at an airport and you sign up to be, or sign up, that's probably not the right term, but when you when you're booking your tickets and you refer to being a disabled individual, it doesn't give you the option to state necessarily what the disability is, and so they automatically come along with the wheelchair or the cart to whiz you across, and you end up missing the other experiences within the airport.
Yes, I've been wheeled around airports many times and feeling like a little old granny at the age of 20, you know, in a wheelchair. So yeah, it's right though. I mean, it would be lovely to be able to, again, just participate in the shops and the restaurants, which it sounds, you know, on the surface of it is so trivial. And yet, when you actually think about it, the message that that gives you, can I participate in the shops and the restaurants and everything that everyone else is doing? That means something to how do I feel about myself and how do I feel about the rest of the world and how they view me?
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, look, Fern, I've really enjoyed speaking to you today. It has been amazing. And I really do believe in everything that you do in terms of trying to promote this to the wider world and to express your experiences. But before we just come to the end of it, I also wanted to ask if there's anything further that you wanted to add, that you wanted to say or sort of leave us with as a bit of a closing message, really, from your experiences or how you see the world.
I would just say that I think all of us can connect with this on one level or another. And I think the reason that I've tried to emphasize kind of the very human, very real, raw experiences of how it actually feels to be in these situations is because I think that's something that everyone can connect with. And I think that all of us have something, you know, it might not be a disability, it might be whatever situation you find yourself in that influences how you are in the world. And I think this goes deeper than just how are you going to build a building. It is what messages do we want to put out there in the world about who is included, who should feel like they belong. And surely for all of us, that message is everyone. We want everyone to feel like they belong, because then we can get closer not just to who we want to be ourselves, but to each other. And I think when we get closer to each other, we create a world where everyone can feel just a little bit less alone.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And thank you again, Fern, for sharing your sort of story with us. We have really enjoyed the whole process of working with you, with CIAT, with talks and such like. And it's great to have you here on our podcast of Where It's At, and for giving us a fresh insight into it and how we need to think about design and effectively belonging. Really do appreciate it. And thank you again, Fern, for all your time. Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks for all the work you do.
You've been listening to Where It's At. A huge thanks to our guests and to you for listening. Want to learn more about architectural technology, how to progress your career, or how to work with a chartered architectural technologist? Head to architecturaltechnology.com to find out more. The contents and views expressed by individuals in the Where It's At podcast are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of the companies they work for or the host. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as advice.